Oh, we're rolling already. Oh, okay. Now, as we get further and further out in the solar system, away from the sun, to more recently discovered or rediscovered planets, we are encountering things that are more and more rare. And the things that are more and more rare, there are fewer people who can respond to them, and even respond to them in the negative. So when we're talking about the negative side, or the personal or the lower side of Pluto, we find some responses in people, but not a whole lot. And when it comes to the positive side, it's even rarer yet, so it's very unlikely that you're going to find a lot of higher side Pluto people around. When you do find the personifications, higher or lower, they're more likely to be perverted because we don't seem to be able to handle something new very well at all. And something that is especially subtle and powerful, that is always the case. So that if you look at the tables of stars, the influences of specific fixed stars, you find that many, many more of them are malefic than are benefic, and that's because for that same reason. Now, if you had a personification of the lower Pluto, you would have somebody that would be completely willful, completely arbitrary, somebody who wanted power and wanted to express it arbitrarily, and somebody that was undeterrable. Now, if you want to use the word stubborn or pig-headed or something like that, it works. But it's especially a kind of negative stubbornness that is with the lower personification of Pluto. And it's kind of cold. And it's almost ruthlessly blunt or ruthlessly indifferent to the suffering of others. It's not hateful, it's not malicious, but it's just coldly determined. And so what we're talking about here in the lower personification, the negative lower personification, is we're talking about something like a mafia don. You know, this is something that has to be done. Pluto rules the underworld, and that's the kind of character that you find there. And it's amazing how it works out. So Pluto is a personification of ruthless passion. Not anger, rage. A silent kind of rage, something that is deeper and that seethes beneath the surface and waits for its time, and then it just obliterates everything. So it's the power of cold, controlled passion. It's not passion that one loses it in an outburst. And this is arbitrary to the nth degree. It's sort of like, this is so because I say it so. It isn't necessarily destructive or criminal or sinister, but human beings, being what they are, tend to use this color in the palette in that way. It can be very positive, and it can have ends that are very good for the world, but it certainly isn't cheery and optimistic about them. I guess you could say that doing positive things, Pluto would do in a sphinx-like way. It rules the sphincter too, but that's another thing. Sometimes Pluto is the personification of megalomania, where a person not only wants absolute power, but feels they actually do have it. And in such case, it's a detachment where the spirit has sort of pulled away. And megalomania, for example, is one of the symptoms of the latter stages of syphilis. Isn't it? You know, it's just the way it, again, the way it all works out. Syphilis being a venereal disease having to do with Scorpio and ending up with that kind of an attitude as one of the last things that comes out of it. Sometimes the megalomania is really there. You know, the person really is power crazy. There was a movie that Werner Herzog did about this band of people that are taking a raft down the Amazon River, Aguirre, the Wrath of God, and he was sort of a Pluto type of figure, if you wanted to see a Pluto figure. It has to do with the application of will or desire, and that can be either for good or for ill. But if you work on the principle of desire, something happens. When you do something through the function of desire, you harden yourself a little bit. And what we're talking about is that kind of soul hardening in the desire body, where a person, you know, even doing good things and doing them on the basis of desire gets like that. The hardening actually becomes part of the psychology, because we're dealing with a planet here that deals with various types of fixations. And usually those fixations are obsessive or they're compulsive. And so this is the planet that, if afflicted, especially with an emotional planet, has to do with the obsession compulsion syndromes. And it has a negativity about it, that scorpionic kind of negativity, that one of the ways that Pluto works out in its fixation is in fascination. And sometimes a person can be fascinated with sin or with iniquity or all of those kinds of things. And also the fascination sometimes becomes a fetish kind of consciousness, especially if you mix Neptune into the blend. It's a funny thing about fascination with desire. You know, you can get hooked on it. It's you know, like, I lost my thought there, so maybe it'll come back to me. Because Pluto is the vehicle for the part of our being that represents will, it is often a kind of will that is powerfully attractive, like the attractive power of a serpent with its hypnotic ability. Sometimes it's powerfully repugnant and repulsive. And sometimes it's both. You're both fascinated by it and you're repulsed by it. So it is in its personification that is phenomenal. It is the personification of desire, fixation. And if it isn't a fixed desire where you're focused on the desire itself as an obsession, sometimes it is fixation on the attitude of the desire. And when it becomes a fixation on the attitude of a desire, it is opinionation, it is prejudice, it is bias, it is all of those kinds of things. Sometimes it is outright prejudice. And prejudice is usually has some kind of personal feeling about it. I don't know how to say it. This is a personification that tries to be self-contained. And in its self-containment, it is sometimes antisocial. Sometimes it's milder and is just plain unsocial. But almost always, it prefers to be alone. The characteristic of this is a kind of conservatism. And it thinks in terms of recycling. If you have to bring the house down and destroy it in order to recycle, you have no qualms about doing that. It's not a pleasant night tonight. Yeah, yes, yes. Yes. It likes very basic fundamentals. It likes rudiments. And if something isn't fundamentally sound, it's perfectly happy to destroy it. So that, not modify it on the fly, but destroy it. Now, a good example of this is in the philosophy of Muhammad. Muhammad, in the Quran, he isn't so concerned about unbelievers. But he's concerned about those that are fundamentally incorrect, the misbelievers. And he has no mercy for misbelievers. It's just like they should, they should be gotten away with, done away with. But the way Pluto does it is not always active destruction. It much more prefers to withhold influence or to withdraw the power that sustains something and holds it and just allow things to collapse. It isn't necessarily mean like it used to be in the Richard Nixon years, let him twist in the wind. It is something that's much more, I'm sorry, but this is the way it has to be. It isn't really, I'm sorry. Those are just the words that you have to use. If it's distorted, it becomes very reactionary. And it can become very rebellious and certainly uncooperative. But in all of these things, it turns its negativity on itself. And this is the planet that has to deal with guilt. And there is feeling to this. Not quite romance, but there is an identification with the negativity. Like the Hell's Angels are very much a Pluto kind of thing. They identify with, they have all these different badges of skankiness that you can wear. That's sort of the anti, not even the anti-hero, I'd much rather be behind. So this personification represents the inversion of things, reflexive activities. And it is the deepest, it reflects the divine spirit, which is the deepest part of our spiritual physiology. So in the material world, in the lower personification, it becomes irrevocable material law. Especially instinct. It's very, very hard to change something if it is instinctual. And in this sense of instinctuality, we don't mean a guiding group spirit. We mean a sleeping spiritual potential that is asleep in the form of a becoming being, and that the character of what it is going to be is there, but when it's asleep in the form, it is something that is instinctual and very hard to control. This is usually not something that is manifested with full waking consciousness. It is something that lies, it's almost like what Paul says, there's another law in my members. He's saying that it is right within our bodies. It's right, the stuff of the bodies themselves. So when will is inverted and becomes instinct, our conscious attention can't do very much to it. It even seems to get stronger in resisting. It sort of lives in the friction of it all. So this personification can, on one hand, be just a simple gumption to do something. But if one identifies with not doing, then it becomes impedimental and identifies itself as being an obstacle. In another way, this is the personification of sex. Not love, not affection, but the drive of sex that is almost impossible to stop. Ultimately, it is the deepest source of creativity. But when it is manifest in the body and has all of the instinctuality that goes along with it, it has all of these cold, even if it's passion, it's sort of a cold, undeniable passion. If it's turned to creativity, even the lower manifestation is an undauntable thing. The creation you can't stop. It's a creative passion, Promethean kind of frozen fire that just won't give up. And it demands that you create. And it has that in the same way that there is a sexual demand that presses one on, there is that same kind of demand about creativity. We said just a few minutes ago that it likes to withdraw its influences, and when it does, this is the planet of disintegration. It takes a lot of love to hold together the disintegrating effect of sexuality. The higher spiritual part of Pluto is an absolute, unbreakable unity. But the lower, the inversion in the material world is very divisive. If a person identifies with Pluto in this sense, one is identifying with death or with decay or decadence or rot or anything like that. And there are people that do that. They make their whole living by it. It's not necessarily negative. And this is the sign or a signification of potential, the potential fertility, or the potential that is in wealth left behind. So potential is a very perfect word for this planet, because it works through the potential as a threat, or as a power that isn't active but is still there. It's like that still water behind the dam that gives the potential to the voltage when something goes through the turbines that it turns. This is an unmoved mover kind of consciousness. And it's ultimately fertile. If it were up to the sex function, every expression of the sex function would be fertile. So this is a personification of unstoppable determination. And part of its unstoppability is the fact that you can't put your finger on it. It's always invisible. It is, you've heard the statement many times, you never see them, it's the powers that be. you've heard it, it's one of those things like the outside world. People, and this is not like the outside world. Well, I've been in every place I've been in, I've heard that same thing, and I begin to wonder where the outside world is. Of course, that may be local to my personal horoscope, too. This personification will not allow questioning of its intents or of its motives or what it does. It just will not allow questioning. There has been a time when I have courted a Plutonic woman that I didn't know anything about, and I would ask her question after question after question, and each and every question would be disregarded offhand. But that was part of the fascination of it. So this personification, since it deals with recycling, deals with really powerful things. This is the force of conservation as it works out in reconstruction, or in remodeling, or in renovation, or in repair, or in redemption. Fixing a trailer hitch so that it's stronger than it was in the first place. That kind of Newtonian quality. This is a planet that, whether it is manifest for negative or for positive, it is durable. And it is reliable. And it is steadfast. And it is dependable. You may not like the attitude, but it's going to be there. And it can do those things better than anybody else because it isn't detracted. It doesn't have personal feelings that one has to set aside, and one really doesn't want to give up one's personal feelings. If you have personal feelings, like if a surgeon had personal feelings about pain, that surgeon would have all kinds of qualms about operating. And a surgeon has to say, well, this is for the good of things. We have to rebuild this part of the body. I have a rebuilt bronchus inside of myself. How do you like that for vertebral rising? Want to see my operation scar? We can put it on television. There are some, you know, they went in there. They weren't caring about how much pain it was going to cost me, probably for all the rest of my life, because a lot of nerves were severed and everything on the left side of my body doesn't function the same way, but it was a matter of life and death. So this is a personification of a kind of divine necessity. Not simple human necessities, which are ruled by Saturn, but divine necessity. You have to do this. Life has to go on. You have to face these things in life, and unless you front them and go ahead and do them, you're never going to progress. And that's gumption in the very best way of all. So this is an attitude that is something like a cornerstone. And it doesn't care about finesse. It happens to be even more subtle than the things that are represented by Uranus and Pluto, but it doesn't care about that. It's just that this has to be done. Newtonian people, we'll see in mythology in a little bit, are often dull or a little blunt, but they're reliable and they're strong and you can be sure of them. Now, there are some things in life, even simple things in life, where this lower personification of Pluto applies that cannot be attained unless you are absolute and never, ever give up or never, ever doubt in the very least. And that is where Pluto comes in. There are some things you just have to hang on and have to hang on. Never doubt, never anything, just go forward. Now the transcendental personification of Pluto is even more rare than Uranus or Neptune. And it is more indirect than either of those planets. When Neptune does magical things, they happen because there has been some preconceptualization of them, some imagination. That's not the way it is with Pluto. In the highest sense, it wills things. It intends that things happen. With Pluto, especially in the higher personification, you're dealing with divine intent, whether in the macrocosmic divine or in the lower human divine. It lets the imagination or the conceptualization or the working out to other beings. It just intends, and that's all it has to do. And that intention is a demand. And it demands that things be done. And by golly, if you're under the duress or the coercion of demand, things do get done. And they get done because there is a kind of magic, but it isn't the magic that somebody has pulled some manipulation of the ethers or anything like that. It is a magic of realizing that at the basis of all is the source of all, and the source of all has the will to bring anything into existence. And that's what you're talking about when you're talking about the higher side of the field. There's no huffing or puffing here, not even much thought. But it's infinitely subtle. It's so infinitely subtle that Pluto is associated with darkness. It's never associated with light. Even the divine spirit is associated with invisibility at best, darkness often. If too much is lost of the divine intent, turn it into light. And that fundamental being that cannot be in any other way is lost if it is obvious, such as light is. So we're talking about what is behind light. We're talking about something profoundly, profoundly deep. And you have to be careful of trying to identify with even the transcendental personification, because you can get caught up in it. And you can get caught up especially easily in the destructive side of it. This is a personification, a transcendent personification of evil that can easily be misunderstood. It is the source of divine light, it's the source of divine love, but in order to be itself, it can't be those things. It doesn't intentionally create. It just is, and somehow creation happens around it. It intends to be itself, I guess you could say. It's succinct. This is not isolation as the lower manifestation. It's true that in periods of Plutonian periods of history, there are tendencies to isolationism, at least in the United States history. So it's beyond comprehension. So maybe I should just shut up, and that's the talk for tonight. But it is also blindly arbitrary, because everything that issues from it is good, and it's true, and the goodness is even beyond question. So this is even truth that is beyond tautology, because in tautology you have defined it. It seems arbitrary, but it just is. It's that kind of arbitrariety. And it seems like static, but when you're talking about something that is this rare and that's something that is this deep, whether something is static and quiescent or whether it is lively and dynamic, the words don't even make any sense. It certainly is subsistent, and to some small degree it is intelligible from what comes out of it, but it is not a lot that you can say. It's indifferentiable. So you can see how it can be so faithful in either the higher or the lower manifestation is because it is only that kind of oneness. To us, it is the deep, dark mystery of everything. It's a mystery that is very, very engaging and that keeps one trying to solve it forever and ever. Obviously, what we experience here on Earth is probably only an echo of another echo, and is probably distorted and very weakened at that. However, maybe very infrequently, we do have experiences of power just in being. And they defy everything. So you can see that the defiance that in the lower manifestation, the negative lower manifestation that is rebelliousness, relates to something that cannot be defied. It's ultimate authority, but it isn't even a matter of authority. It just is. Perhaps someday we'll be able to function consciously in this kind of state of being. That's a long way off. This is absolute, it's unshakable faith. The opposite pole of will, which is so similar to will, is faith. It accepts all, it endures all, and it does all. There's no question, no negativity, there isn't even positivity. It's just faith that something's going to happen. The way people accomplish things, who live by faith, is almost identical to the way people accomplish things who live by will. They're so close to each other. Again, this is a personification that might seem stern or even grave. Certainly august and definitely masterful. It's even beyond conceit, because conceit is too much of a glossy deflection from its true nature. It's a luxury that isn't necessary at all. This is pure potentiality, pure potency. It just is, even though it might seem like it isn't. That's the way the subtle will works. When you're working with will, it is not like knitting your brows or anything like that. That belongs to desire. Will just wills things into existence. It utilizes imagination, but it isn't imagination. A really good, simplistic example of will working better than imagination is in the book Demian by Herman Hesse. It's not a deep book or anything, but this one kid has the teacher do something he wants the teacher to do. And his chum asks him, how did you do that? He said, well, I knew what I wanted, and I just saw him doing it until he did it. That's on the edges of black magic, probably even across the border and into that territory. But it's almost non-assertive. That character didn't say, I made him take his arm and pick up the pencil and things like that. That would be an assertion. He just said, I saw him do it. You know, it's a much more seemingly passive kind of thing. So this is faith and will, and both faith and will are presubstantial. This is the wealth of all things, because you can have the wealth of all things because it's before there's any substance for the wealth to be found in. And so that's the kind of subtlety that we're dealing with. Again, it's almost impossible to talk to about a planet like this. This is the commonly accepted symbol. In the parentheses here are all kinds of different Pluto symbols that have been used by astrologers since it has been discovered. By the way, this other table is, I left it up for tonight in case you're interested. It is a table of cosmography and cosmology and different kinds of beings and things like that if you're interested in it. The cosmography is in macrocosm and in microcosm. All right. When you see a bunch of symbols like this, it's probably like cures for acne. Everybody's got a cure for acne because they don't really know what it is. And so they just think that it works. Astrologers have vanities just like everybody else. And one of the things that vanities that astrologers have is they like to think that they have the exclusive theory of who rules what. And in this case, it would be every astrologer would like to get on the ground floor and say, I have the real symbol for what Pluto is. It's that kind of a thing. I agree with the standardized symbol because it has all of the elements of symbolism that we've been using all along, and they're in order. This is like the really the top-down order of things. The cross of matter is at the bottom, and then the semicircle of soul is attached to the cross, but the circle of spirit is suspended. You know, like to say all of existence is suspended in the spirit, and the spirit is suspended in all of existence. And that suspensive quality of the circle is, I like that very much. It's an excellent symbol. In mythology, we're going to be very short tonight. We'll probably be just a little bit over an hour. Because there's not a whole lot about Pluto that we can do, and I can't tell you about all kinds of Pluto people that I know. In Greco-Roman mythology, the Greeks called it Hades, and the Romans called it Pluto. The word Hades means sightless in the dark of the underworld. This is because this is a knowing without needing even any kind of spiritual perception. It's all knowing because it's all causal, but its causality isn't overt. It is just there. And if you are just present and that the quality that you have is in eternal presence, you don't have to know in the sense of knowledge. It's a sightlessness because it's beyond light. It's so subtle. Pluto is the lord of the underworld. It's called the Asphodel Fields and Tartarus, and even the Elysian Fields. The word underworlds means the world underneath this one, that is behind or in back of it. There are all kinds of things that flow into and out of the underworld, and called rivers. There is Aornis, which means birdless, Archeron, Procyclus, Leaf, Pyrophlegethon, and probably the most famous is Styx. He's the lord of the place that has the greatest purity. It's a place that will exist even if there isn't any light. When you die, it will still be there. But it's also a place of redemption. Redemption of all the things you were never able to carry out here. Redemption of changing your character by being able to see what is under it and what is behind it. And so Pluto is called the lord of regeneration and of redemption. Mystics try to die every day. They try to enter the world, inner world or underworld every night. It's through the personal unconscious, but they try to do that. The realm of Hades is called the eighth sphere. It is the sphere of death. It's the sphere of destruction, where everything is frozen, and everything is frozen into a kind of matter that doesn't change. This is why some astrologers call Pluto the planet of frozen fire. Three brothers, Zeus had the thunderbolt, Poseidon had the trident, and Hades had the helmet of darkness or of invisibility. In Norse mythology, it's called the Tarnhelm. And once you put the Tarnhelm on, you were invisible. That is, you had the power over all the subtle influences, and you could make it as though you weren't visible or being able to be seen at all. In Greek mythology, Hades is most famous for abducting Chore or Persephone, whatever name you want to use. He abducts her, rapes her, and makes her queen of Tartarus. And she has to stay because she ate 3 pomegranate seeds. Those are the seeds from the underworld. They represent the 3 winter months and the time that everything is dead because Persephone is no longer here. The only friend that Hades has at all is Mercury. They share the caduceus together, and they share all of the 3 symbolic elements together. Only the immortals can leave the grip of Hades. This is why the trial of every candidate for initiation is to enter the inner worlds and to come back out without getting, he's got this chair, and it's called the chair of contentment. And if you sit in the chair, the centuries go by, and you're content, and you're stuck there. You can't get out once you've gotten in. And spiritual life does not like contentment at all. See, this is one of those things that proves the principle that in spiritual unfoldment, the greatest trials are in success. So some people leave the body and they get in the inner world and their temptation is, I want to stay here all the time. And they become contented, not knowing that it is when things from the inner world are taken and finalized, even though they must die in that finalization, and even though they're always going to be imperfect, that there is no progress if one stays in the inner worlds. So that's a really, you know, that's... There's something to be said about the demand of Pluto. You might say that the contentment is the antithesis. With Scorpionic people, you can never satisfy them because they always want something better and they always want something different. Hades is very closed-minded. He's so closed-minded that he doesn't care what's going on in the upper worlds. He knows he's going to get them all anyway. I like really care about it all. So we can see that there's a different kind of a psychology to the closed-mindedness and negativity of Pluto. He's not worldly wise. He doesn't care about that. He's not even mentally quick. Humans, Sisyphus, outsmart him. And he does catch people by, again, their... motionlessness. Beside Pluto and Hades, the Romans had another god called Plutus, who was the god of wealth. And this is associated with Pluto, the god of death, because you give up everything when you die, and death hangs on to it. This is with Socrates' things. He thought the reason that the god of the underworld was so wealthy was because there was the gold of understanding, not just the gold of legacy, of physical mineral gold, but an inheritance of wisdom of all the people that have been. Another name for Hades is Dis, the god of repulsion, the god of selfish desire, disintegration, dissolution. I'm glad to see that it has come into the slang language again to the African Americans and say, he dissed me. Perfect word. And it had been for several hundred years. It had not much currency, and now it has been brought in. All of those words of diss are perfect for Pluto. Chore, who means the goddess of the center. And that center is the center of gravity. Do you realize that there is a center of gravity in the center of the Earth, that if you could dig a well that went right straight through the center of the earth and came off the other side, and it would be just one hole all the way through. If you dropped something like a lead ball or something in there, it would drop to the center of gravity. It would go beyond because of the momentum, but then it would be drawn back, and it would eventually go back and forth until it settled right at the center of gravity. And the center of gravity is invisible. You could have that tunnel going all the way through the earth, and you'd never see the center of gravity. Ball players and golfers know that there is a certain way, there's a certain spot. Baseball players call it the joy spot. But you don't have to swing as hard, and the ball comes off with much more force because all of the momentum, it has its force in the center of gravity. And if you have that center of gravity, you have all of the advantage. You have all of the mechanical advantage. And it's never visible. So this is one of those Pluto things. Pluto is rules things like black holes, where everything gets sucked in. Even the light doesn't come out. Perfect Pluto conception. The Norse name was Hel, which is where our word H-E-L-L comes from. Only in the Norse, it was a goddess of the underworld. And in some ways, I think I might agree with the Northern European. It's a goddess of a different kind of light. It wasn't, Hel was not a goddess of darkness, but of a different kind of light. Her parentage and her effects are quite similar to Hades. All right. Horoscopic planetary figures. Every person in your life represents one or more planets, and every planet in your life represents one or more people. Now, it's very likely that you'll find very many highly Plutonic figures in your life. One has to be content with partial Plutonic figures at most. Will builders. People who demand something of you that cause you to go against resistance. They command you. And in that you build your will. Sometimes they are the people who help you straighten your back. I obviously need one. Sometimes they're torturous in their character. You'll never succeed with the will builder in your life, but you'll always become stronger. And that's one of the boundless or endless ways that this planet works in transcendence. It isn't looking, it's looking for the eternal, which is always present. And so if improvement is one of those things, in will, yes, that's what it does. If you want to become strong, you play with people who are stronger than you. And that builds up your strength. Here's one that you're likely to run into. Obsessive or compulsive figures. Fixated people who just can't let go of something. It's such a thing, it has that hypnotic power. The intent is such that draws you into it, especially if it is obsession, an obsession where one is in love with the desire itself, and it brings that obsessiveness out of you. Sometimes people become fascinated with something, and they obsess on it, and it takes everything of them. There are some people that can't get away from games or something like that. Sometimes it's an addiction, but addiction is different than obsession. I have a little bit of both myself. In fact, enough to go around for several people. People who are influence people in your lives. That is, people who are absolute and who have the ability to get things done. In that, I have been more of a Pluto person to other people than other people have been to me. I have Pluto in the 11th house. And I just never, ever give up on things. And it takes with friends. And people do build willpower as a consequence of it. But it's that thing that is ultimately faithful, where you can, you know, you can, your influence almost ties them into you. Another potential is somebody who is a transformer or an alchemist or a regenerator in your life. People that can bring you back. This is what doctors are supposed to be. They're supposed to regenerate your will and your body so that it comes back. They're not supposed to be fighting diseases. That's a stupid notion. You're supposed to help the person come back, to have the strength to throw off their own negativity that is represented in the illness. Now, I'll grant you that there are cases that, you know, it's a wise idea to be prophylactic and to wipe things out, but that's not the ultimate intent of healing. When we're talking about Pluto, we're talking about a healing planet. So people who help you transform yourself so that you become something different than you ever were before. Ultimately, this person should always be with yourself. And this is why people who have Sun-Pluto aspects is really important, because they are people who can be all alone and pull themselves away from other things. And in that state of retreat, you will yourself to become something different. This is one that probably the most likely that you'll run into, a bigot or a person of injustice. Doesn't make any difference what religion it is. There are people that have set opinions, they have frozen feelings, and those frozen feelings are against things, and they won't open their mind. It isn't a matter of mind. This is a matter of desire. It's never rational, and if you try to approach it with rationality, it doesn't work. Like we said before, it's people like the Hell's Angels, the Black Muslims, as well as the KKK. They both function on the same thing. Here in Wisconsin, I think they're pretty much quieted down now, but up around Wisconsin Rapids, there was that Posse Comitatus. They actually shot it out with the another kind of person, a degenerate and a rebel, not a Uranian kind of rebel, but a defiant, a non-cooperative person, a reactionary. Our CIA fits in that. It's both degenerate and reactionary, and it tries to insulate itself from anything legal. You know, there's not much difference between the CIA and the mafia in the way, the attitude that they have about doing things and the way they go about it. People who go back, who want to go back to the way things were. That's that recycling thing. Only they don't realize you can't go back, and what they're trying to go back to sometimes never really existed in the first place, but you still try to go back anyway. Here's one that we do read of sometimes in the newspapers, isolators. It can be somebody who isolates self and becomes self-sufficient, but it can also be someone who dominates other people by isolating them from social contact. This is what an abuser always does, controls people, cuts them off from anyone else except their own influence. That's why my dominatrix has me in a collar 24 hours a day. That kind of thing it can be. You know, they actually have restaurants like that in New York City now where somebody will whip you and give you a spanking if you really deserve it. And they go to the restaurant. I don't know how you order. I guess you give what they take you. They take what you give you. All right, colors. Black. But you have to think of black not in terms of a pigment, but you have to think of it in terms of the absence of light. in terms of the absence of everything. Anything that's colorless or lightless. Some people claim that dried blood red or pomegranate red. Elements, some people claim plutonium. Again, I'm not one that I know that. I do know that plutonium is the deadliest poison we know of. I think one pinhead's worth will kill 10,000 people or something. Mark, you know those kinds of facts. You know how many people a milligram of plutonium will... Oh, how could you do that? Trees, plants, herbs, and foods, I don't know. I suppose things that would be very deeply poisonous would be plutonium. And some people would claim that bacteria and even some fungi would be plutonium. Any herb that paralyzes, paralysis, that unmoved quality is a plutonium thing. I just recently worked with a young man, geez, only 30-some years old, and he has ALS, and his wife has to feed him. He's got a little baby that's not even a year old, and it's a rapid onset, and it was really clear, Mercury square Pluto, that a paralysis through the nerves, it was just as clear in the horoscope as it could be. The emissary, I don't know of any emissary. It's so remote and so deep in the unconscious that to try and contact it might be futile. In fact, a lot of people who have tried to focus on the absolute through something like Pluto have often gone mad in one way or another. Physiology, it rules the testes along with Mars. It rules that ultimate source of creation, that undeniable drive for life. Bone marrow is ruled by Pluto. The blood is ruled by the life spirit, and the life spirit is an emanation from the divine spirit, and so the blood is produced in the marrow of the bone. The center of gravity, which is near the root of the nose, is ruled by Pluto. And it's called the silent watcher, part of your being that does nothing, does everything by doing nothing but by watching it. It's an octave planet, very deeply spiritual, but it's a kind of spirituality that is foreign to us because the emotions are something we can't even register. It's the opposite of everything. It is said in its lower manifestation to be a crystallizer. It is always said to be a neutral or a variable, but certainly neutral. I don't know about variable. It is a malefic planet, and it is a very superior planet. And it's a generational planet. On the average, it takes 21 years to go through a sign. In terms of activation, there are two ways that you can look at it. I'll show you one and then give you the other. Mars represents action. Pluto represents reaction or inaction. Mars represents construction. Pluto represents destruction or reconstruction. Mars represents warfare, like in Belos. Pluto is rebellion. Mars represents fire. Pluto represents frozen fire. Mars is vital. Pluto is lethal. There's something about spirit that goes beyond continued existence in a material sense. Mars is direct. Pluto is indirect. It just intends. Mars is looking at it in a different way, that it can be both high or low. Mars represents generation. Pluto represents either degeneration or regeneration. Mars represents projection. Pluto represents descent, as in scent and descent. Mars represents energy. Pluto represents potential, static potential. Mars is active. Pluto is again potential. Mars is projection. Pluto is dejection or rejection. Pluto rules Scorpio, or Scorpio rules Pluto. So that if you have Scorpio on the ascendant and Pluto is in the ninth house, it would indicate something like through faith or through will, you would have the power of being able to do almost anything you wanted with your body. If Pluto is on the third house, it would be a tendency to communicate by desire. If Pluto would then be in the 11th house, it would be that friends would be the movers of desire and communication. Or communication through desire would be a way that you could control friends. The rulership is the most fundamental connection in astrology, and you can't learn astrology without working with it. It has its detriment in Taurus. Pluto likes all of that invisibility and subtlety of Scorpio, and the plain, obvious, overt, bedrock kind of Taurus thing it doesn't care for at all. It has its exaltation in Gemini. Its only friend is Mercury, and it likes the cool, indifferent kind of communication. Things are always a little too personal in Virgo, so it likes Gemini better. And right now it is in its fall, and we are seeing that. Pluto is in its fall in Sagittarius, and we're seeing that in all kinds of religious prejudice and things of that order. When Pluto is in the east, that is in the first house, especially conjoined the ascendant, or halfway up into the 12th. A person is usually much quieter than most other people. And the quietness has a tension, but not a nervous tension. It's more like a coil that's pushed down, and that coil, you know, can just strike like that. And part of the silence is because it is very grave. If you really want to put Pluto into a rage, you just laugh at what they consider to be grave. If you laugh at their gravity, you know, like that's taking lightly what they know is the most ultimately important. Pluto in the east doesn't have the evil eye, or have the eye of hatred like Saturn does, but it's more or less like a cold stare. Sometimes the person is very likely to be obsessive and extremely willful. With Pluto in the east, you're more likely to see the mandibular overbite, where the lower jaw, the teeth of the lower jaw are out over the teeth of the upper. It's usually very, very controlled. And somehow there's always some kind of strange darkness there that never gets solved. And that's all that I have tonight. We have one more meeting left, and we're going to talk about the aspects next time. And it'll probably be at least a 75-minute talk next time, because we're going to try and go through everything in one big hurry. Any questions? Thank you very much. Oh, I think it's picking up, it's slowing down. I think it's about 2009 or something like that. Yeah. What? 11. No. 11. It means you have influential friends.